Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
Back here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network on Fantasy Sports Today. Kevin Walsh alongside George Kurtz, taking you up until noon. And George, we're just talking about the Yankees and the Red Sox. And I wanted to ask you, just kind of, do you feel like the rivalry then is back? Because a lot of people felt this way. I think it was the very first series of the year. There was the little dust up, and everybody was like, "Okay, we're all in. Both teams are good. Both teams are kind of fighting, and they're built up, right? The aggression is there." I think that that is part of this rivalry, is the potential for violence, if you will. And you've seen this rivalry now for a long time. You've seen it at its peaks and its valleys. Does it feel back? Does it feel like now every single Yankees-Red Sox game is not just must-watch for Yankees-Red Sox fans, but for any sports fan, for baseball fans? You have to tune in for all three games of this set.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the first games I ever watched, or certainly first seasons I ever watched, was the brawl you'll see on TV every now and then, the highlights of when Lou Piniella slides on the Carlton Fisk at home plate, and everything, all hell just breaks loose. And that was back in the 70s. You know, I think it was 76 offhand. That was back when, players weren't making millions and millions of dollars. So making the playoffs was huge because they wanted that extra money. Everybody gets, I don't know what it is, $50,000 to make the playoffs, whatever it is. And these players needed that money. Back in the 70s, that wasn't that far off where guys would work a second job in the offseason. To once again make money. You weren't making gazillions of dollars as a baseball player. And back then it was different. That was the, in that brawl, Bill Lee was one of the top pitchers for the Boston Red Sox. And he had made some comments about the Yankees. I think Bill Lee always shut down the Yankees. Left-handed, he just shut them down like a lot of lefties did back in that day. And he said the Yankees hit like they have pocketbooks instead of bats. Something along that comment. And in that brawl, the Yankees went after Bill Lee. And when I say went after him, I'm not talking, let's give him a black eye, broken nose, bloody face. No, they went after him, his pitching arm. That's just the way things were back then. You think takeout slide at second base were bad a couple of years ago? Back then, guys would go in standing up and try and body check you into left field. It was just a different game back then. So that's where I come from, from that point of the rivalry. In the 80s, okay, it wasn't all that much. 90s, it picked up again. Pedro Martinez throwing at everybody, and the Yankees being a team of the 90s. And then it did die down for a little bit, and now it's back. I don't know if it'll ever reach the hatred. Truly, I don't know if any series could ever reach the hatred of what it used to be. Like I said, different kind of game. Everyone's a gazillionaire now. It's not really worth hurting anybody. You don't want to do that. I understand every now and then tempers flare. We saw that with the Tyler Austin slide to second base, and they got upset, and they threw at him, blah, 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 blah. And I think it'll flare up every now and then, but it'll never be like it used to be. Do I think the rivalry's back? Yes and no. I think it is back. I think these two teams are great teams, two of the best in baseball. I don't think either one's the best. I think that's Houston. But I think they're two of the best. I think that it's there. But I think both teams know we're making the playoffs. That's not the question here. Really, even this series this weekend. Yes, it's a big series. And yes, I will watch each game and I'm enjoying it. But unless one team sweeps the other, it doesn't matter. One team will gain one game on the other. Yeah, that's it. Yankees won last night, so they're certainly in the driver's seat here. But they got Chris Sale going against Sonny Gray tonight. Anyone really think Gray is going to pitch a good game? I have my doubts. So odds are it's tied going into tomorrow, which means the first two games didn't mean anything. And then tomorrow you get Severino versus Price, which puts the Yankees, once again, in the advantage, you would think. The Yankees have beaten up Price all year long, and Severino is what Severino is, although the Red Sox did destroy him once at Fenway Park earlier this year. But like I said, unless one team happens to sweep the other and gain three games, it doesn't mean a whole lot. It's still June/July. This is not September. It would mean more, obviously, if it was September, but it's not. You know, half the season, I believe the official halfway point of the season was at some point yesterday or Thursday. I believe that's when the official half point of a season is. So you still got half a season left. And I said, I'm a logical person. I see things differently. Both these teams are making the playoffs. So it takes some of that, you know, some of that juice away. If there was a chance, if there was a, you know, a sixth grade team where someone wasn't going to make the playoffs, then it would feel, oh my God, it would be more gripping. Now it's just the Yankees versus Red Sox. As a Yankee fan, I just keep saying to myself, just don't get swept. Now we've accomplished that goal, and now you go on to the next step. It's sort of like when you come into a season. First thing you want to do, have a winning year. Then you want to make the wild card. Then you want to win the division. You just take baby steps, and that's how I feel about this series. First thing, don't get swept. Did that. Now take two out of three. Did do that. Then, okay, now you go for the sweep.
Yeah, and I think that it is, as you kind of mentioned there, right, it's going to be tough for the rivalry to be back. Like, we're not going to – I don't know if we're going to get the bloody brawls of – years past. I don't know if we need the bloody brawls really of years past either, but I think that these are definitely two of the best teams. I think that their cores are relatively young, which is exciting. The fact that this could kind of build up for years, right? Like, you can have Judge versus Betts kind of maybe as the focal point of it. I like certain things like that to this rivalry that can all add. And I think one of the big things is just sometimes there were in years past where the Yankees were playing the Red Sox, and you knew that they were playing the Red Sox, but people kind of weren't talking about it. But this Yankees-Red Sox, people were talking about it. I had a buddy at my other job who was like, I bet a Mets fan $25 that the Yankees would win tonight's game. Now, I mean, that's obviously Mets fans and their kind of obsession over the Yankees because their own team is in a mess. But, also it just lets you know that people are paying attention. So I think that it is not only good for the Yankees-Red Sox rivalry, but it is a great thing for baseball. It is one of the absolute best things that I think baseball does have to offer is an intense and passionate Yankees-Red Sox rivalry, and it looks like we are going to get that, at least to some degree, so you have to appreciate that. Now, as far as intense and passionate rivalries, I mean, the Mets and the Marlins, George, in this race for last place in the National League, I mean, I don't know if there's anything better on TV right now.
Oh, God. It's funny. Craig Mish, he tweeted out the other day something about the Mets Marlins. Maybe that I think it was that the Marlins were only like a percentage point or two behind the Mets as far as record. And I had to tweet back to him like, Craig, I mean, Mets fans were already on the ledge here, man. You can't be tweeting out stuff like this. You just can't be doing that. I mean, come on. You're just barely ahead of the Marlins, and you got schlacked last night? Oh, God. I mean, it's got to be – I know I equate being a Met fan to being an Islander fan. Mm. When your organization is run badly from the top, and it's the Wilpons. You know, and it's not Sandy Alderson. I think Sandy Alderson's a very good GM. But it's not much you can do when you're – like I said, when the owners are cheap, when they're holding the purse strings, when they're getting involved when they shouldn't be involved, there's not much you can do. You know, the Mets are I feel bad for them. I mean, I would say I know a lot of Met fans. You know, you feel bad for them. I don't understand why Met fans hate the Yankees. I mean, unless you're being a jerk about it and throwing it in their face. I don't care about the Mets as a Yankee fan. We play them four times a year, whatever, six times a year. As long as we win our share of games, I don't care. I hate them during that week or those games. Other than that, I don't care what the Mets do. You know, they beat Philadelphia, lose to Philly, means nothing to me. Hell, I have some to go to my fantasy team. I need them to do well. You know, I had Vermillion on a couple of teams. Needed him to do well. Conforto. You know, that's the way my thinking goes here. I worry about my fantasy team more than I worry about whether or not the Mets are winning and who's getting the back page of Newsday. It doesn't mean anything to me. So I always found that weird.
They're back just, page and, yeah, competing.
But you said it's correct.
I love that. I will
that's
say,
what they are. What's time? But they certainly were doing that.
I remember, though, that someone I had a buddy who went up to school in Boston, because I remember when I was growing up, Mets fans always would like the Red Sox, and it was because the Yankees Red Sox rivalry was so intense, and the Mets were not that good. And I remember him saying, he's like, yeah, it's crazy. Red Sox fans could absolutely care less about the Mets. Like, there's a lot of Mets fans, at least that I know, and I don't know if the same is true for you, but who kind of just. It was almost like the Red Sox was their second team because of the Yankees Mets stuff in a way. And it's like the Red Sox could absolutely care less about how the Mets are doing. And it's not like that's why the Yankees, I don't think the Yankees were cheering for the Phillies ever. Not to say that the Yankees are innocent within this petty rivalry, if you will. Plenty of Yankees fans, whether it be tearing down the Mets if they have any type of success, or kind of, you know, standing over them and poking fun. I think that there is guilt in that. But that was always one of the things that I did find absolutely hysterical, was this idea that that Mets fans felt as if they had this bond with Red Sox fans, and the Red Sox would absolutely care less about them. Now, I want to ask a little bit within this game quickly, because there's also the idea that both of these teams are going to be selling off. We had Sandy Alcantara pitch. Hopefully I'm saying that last name somewhat correctly. Who, if I'm not mistaken, was the top prospect sent over in the Ozuna deal. Now, only went five innings last night, but was in looked okay, I think, right? And the Marlins did get the 8-2 victory. I don't know how much of it you got to see, but was there anything from his five innings or just from the performance overall that is a sign of encouragement, right? Because one of the things about where they are right now is we were expecting the Marlins to be this bad. It was about the youth, and it was about the progression that they could make. So anything from his performance that stood out?
So let me get this straight. You're asking me on a Friday night, Yankee Red Sox, full slate of baseball, if I watched much of the Mets-Marlins game. Okay, if I say yes, that pretty much tells you about the state of my Friday night. I did actually watch it, by the way. I'm making a joke, but I did watch it because of Alcantara. That's the only reason, boys and girls, is because of Alcantara. I did want to see him pitch, see what he looked like here. But you know, I don't want to pile on the Mets here, but are we getting a legitimate read on Alcantara from facing the Mets?
That's true.
I mean, it's the Mets. I mean, they don't have much going for them here. Their lineup isn't pathetic, but even Nemo's not hitting anymore, and he was someone you could look for. Conforto really has had a bad season. Cabrera's been solid, but there's not much to look at here with the Mets. Suspedes isn't back. Jay Bruce isn't back. I mean, it's kind of it's doom and gloom here. Alcantara, I thought, pitched well. Now, he was a little wild, more wild than we wanted to see. You know, and that's, I guess that's expected. First start, you know, you're going to have some jitters there. I think he'll get better. I received a trade, interesting trade request. A trade inquiry from somebody. He wanted to know, I wasn't in the league. He wants to know if he should trade Alcantara for Alex Reyes. You know, my first thought was, well, yes, if you can afford to take a zero this year and you don't need Alcantara to help you. And then he sent me his pitching staff. Damn, he doesn't need the help. Yeah, it was that kind of staff, right? Really strong staff. I mean, probably the strongest staff I've seen on any fantasy team. So what I'm trying to say is Alcantara is not what the height that we had for Alex Reyes. You know, someone was throwing the ball 130 miles an hour, striking everybody out in the minor leagues and the majors, and we took the big things from. But he's not that far down either. You know, he is a top prospect. You know, so I am interested in what he does. I think he's a pickup in most leagues, maybe not 10-team leagues, but 12-team and above, yes, I think he's a pickup there. They're going to be very careful with him. They probably should have brought him up a month ago, so they've already been careful with him. He could have an innings limit at some point this season, maybe in late August, maybe in September. Maybe he's on a pitch limit. He could have all of these. They might skip him some starts. All of this is a possibility. They'll protect Alcantara. It's not like the Miami Marlins are going anywhere this year. But that being said, in the short term, I'm going to pick him up. I think he's someone you could start here. Wins could certainly be tough to come by. He could pitch well and still lose 3-2 because the Marlins can't score runs that night. So that's something you have to watch out for. But I still think he's a pickup.
Yeah, and I think too, right? It's just you can't have all of your eggs in the Alcantara basket. Like if you're picking him up, you have to be aware of all these things. No one's picking him up to be the ace of their current fantasy staff if you are. My condolences for your fantasy roster. But you keep all of that in mind, right? Like, he only went for the 98 pitches. He only went the five innings. So there could have been more juice in the tank, but they're going to be smart about this because, again, a little bit different than their counterparts on the other side of this game, the Marlins knew what they were going to be this year. They plan to be this year. So they're going to be smart about this. And that's exactly what they should do. But I didn't get to see much of it, but I've heard good things. So you take that for what it is. Now, on the other side of this for the Mets, and this is certainly going to carry with into our next segment, but it is now, there's no denying it. It is not rumor. It is out there. The Mets will be sellers. And what that means is that the big names, as you mentioned within the last segment, Noah Syndergaard, Jacob DeGrom. Those are the big names. Now, we maybe see someone come in for Jay Bruce. If Yoenis Cespedes ever plays baseball again and he looks decent, maybe somebody would be interested in him. As Drubal Cabrera has had an okay year, where if somebody is desperate, they might try and pluck him. But the two big names are Noah Syndergaard and Jacob DeGrom. Let me just start here with the very baseline question. Is this the right move for the Mets? Because I feel like we have had this question for this team a lot of years in a row. And while I don't know if it's ever been a 50-50 split, but it does seem like, depending on who you ask, there are people are like, yes, yeah, sell, sell, sell. Or they're like, no, maybe something can happen. It does feel like this is certainly the year where they're going to go all in on the sell. Is that the move that you would make, that they should make?
It's not an easy call. I mean, the first thing I would point out to people, and I'll ask you, I think you probably know the answer. It's I'd much rather ask a regular Met fan this. How old is Jacob DeGrom?
Jacob DeGrom's 30.
Correct. I said, you're the wrong person to ask. He is 30. So this is not a 25-year-old. He's 30. You know, he's in his fifth year, which means his arbitration contracts are starting to get higher and higher. And the Mets don't like that, right? They don't like paying that. You know, no, so I think at the very least you have to hear what's out there. You know, you see what's out there for him. See if someone's willing to overpay. I'm not saying you look to trade. This is the same scenario as before. You don't necessarily look to trade the guy, but you see what's out there. You know, are the Yankees willing to greatly overpay? You're not trading to the Yankees no matter what. Maybe it's the Dodgers. You know, maybe they're willing to overpay. I mean, greatly overpay. We can give you all their top prospects, and you build up from there. He's 30 years old. This is not someone who's going to be pitching, you know, the next 20 years. You know, pitches generally start to go down about 33, 34. So maybe he has 2-3 good seasons left before he becomes more of a normal pitcher. So I think they have to look out for that. Syndergaard, however, is much younger. I mean, I would actually want more for Syndergaard than I would for DeGrom.
We will come back, talk more about this here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Fantasy Sports Today.
So we are here back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Apologies for those technical difficulties. Kevin Walsh and George Kurtz here. And we were just talking a little bit about the Mets and their situation, whether they could move on from Noah Syndergaard or Jacob DeGrom. And George, I agree with you that I would rather probably trade for Noah Syndergaard if I'm most teams because of him being so much younger. But that's kind of the reason why I do not know if the Mets need to necessarily trade him. Like, they have him under control. There is a chance that maybe one day they do actually pay him. We both agree they're not going to pay Jacob DeGrom, but maybe they will pay Noah Syndergaard if things get right. And I think you'll get a big enough haul from the Jacob DeGrom trade that it is somewhat reasonable that maybe you can be competitive enough to where you can justify giving Syndergaard a big contract. And if that time doesn't come, you'll still have plenty of time to trade Noah Syndergaard. I don't know if I would push all in on giving up Syndergaard just yet, but I definitely think they have to move on from DeGrom. Are there certain teams to you that stand out? Because I think one of the difficult things for this situation is just how much sense it makes for the Yankees and the Mets to have these trade talks. If one of those teams were stationed in Minnesota, this trade happens, I think. I almost think there's no doubt about it because there is no team more competitive with a bigger need of pitching that has more assets than the New York Yankees. And that's exactly what the Mets are looking for in a trade partner. But because of that New York to New York tie, it's kind of been moot, but it's also kind of been difficult to really point out who are the other teams that are going to be willing and able to pay up for Jacob DeGrom.
Well, that's the key question, right? What other teams are willing and able? In other words, that want to take on a DeGrom type of player and can afford the price as far as talent. Mm-hmm. We know the Yankees can. The Yankees farm system is loaded. And the Yankees can easily do this and still have a top farm system. Now, I don't know if I'd say the Mets have to trade DeGrom. I don't think they have to. I don't. I have no problem with them keeping him. But I think it's silly not to at least test the market out there and see what's out there for him. I think it's even sillier to say, oh, I'm not trading with the Yankees. You know, or for the Yankees say that I'm not trading with the Mets. I always think that's idiotic. Or I won't trade with them in the division. If that's where the best offer is, that's who you trade with. You're right. Your goal is to make your team better. Now, if, you know, the Mets, they have DeGrom on the table, the Yankees make an offer, and the Dodgers make an offer, and the offers are the same as far as they're concerned, okay, then you want to trade with the Dodgers. I get it. Or, you know, if you want to trade a player out of the division because the offers are the same, fine. Out of the league, fine. I get that. But to hear you put restraints on yourself, aren't you hurting your team? Aren't you doing a disservice to your team? Because you're not making your team better or is as good as it could be. The Yankees, we all know they have the greatest farm system or one of the top five farm systems, and they're willing to give up those players in a trade. You know, but you just go back to last year. The Yankees and Mets couldn't agree on Walker, on Bruce, on Lucas Duda. We're talking guys who, you know, when I talk of top echelon players, anyone who thinks they're going to be able to agree on the players in a Syndergaard and or at the Grom trade? No, I just can't see it. I think Cashman will do everything he can. I think he'll do his due diligence. He'll call the Mets. You know, I guess by now it's Omar Minaya. They'll talk to him, see if something can be worked out. But here's my also fear. Even if Minaya, let's say, is more reasonable, you know, and they get a deal worked out, everything gets worked out, and then they present it to the bullpens, I think they'll say no. Because I think they're more, you know, they don't run this team to win. They run it to make money, and they don't want any publicity. As far as bad publicity. And even if the players they got back, which they wouldn't get back to Torres, you know, that player's not coming back. But let's say they got back, I don't have any names, I'm just throwing some people out there. Let's say they got back Andujar, Sheffield, Clint Frazier, you know, Chance Adams. They got back those four players. You know, and that's a pretty good haul there. Yeah, but it's the fact that outside of Andujar, none's likely to help you right away, even Clint Frazier. That would make them say no. They'd want Torres. They'd want the top guy. We know Torres isn't going because they'd want to be able to sell that. So that's going to be the biggest problem there. I don't think there's any chance in hell that a trade between the Yankees and Mets happens. Not for DeGrom and Syndergaard. I'd be very surprised if that happens. I think the Mets are going to be worried about too many things. It's why I don't think we see many trades in fantasy leagues anymore, Kevin.
Yeah.
I mean, back in the 80s, 90s, when I first started playing fantasy, we always made trades. It's the funnest part. Now no one makes trades. You know why? Because no one wants to make a fair deal anymore. Everyone wants to know they won a deal. Oh, I know. You know, they want to be positive. I won this deal. No one's interested in making a deal that helps out both teams. And they're also worried about if they make a deal that people like you and I are going to rip it apart. Mm. Oh, you're an idiot. How did you make that deal? Why did you contact us first? You're a moron. That's what they're worried about. They're being criticized. And like I said, no one wants to make a fair deal. No one makes fair offers anymore. I understand fully in fantasy that you don't make your best offer right away. But when you make a silly offer, you know, when you offer me your Solardi for Trout, I'm not even talking to you. All right? If you make something that makes sense, something I can negotiate with, I'll get back to you. I'll make a, you know, counteroffer here. But when you get silly and you're trying to rip me off like I don't know what I'm doing, you know, I don't have time for that. And I think the same thing happens here with the Mets. I think they're so interested in only doing a deal that they know they can sell, that they know they've won. Well, they know they're not going to get criticized for. I think it's going to be hard for them to trade DeGrom and or Syndergaard to anybody.
It has been really tough, actually, kind of, because I've laughed about the idea of them making that trade with you on this show. I've laughed about it with Mike on this show. I thought that it was completely ludicrous. That at one point, I think it was maybe the Daily News, the back page, was both Syndergaard and DeGrom in the pinstripes. It felt crazy. The problem that I've had with now completely shaking this whole idea off is just how much sense it makes. And I know that, you know, you've said it many times, they couldn't agree on a Lucas Duda trade. And you couldn't be more right, right? Like, but maybe because this deal is so important to both teams, maybe it gets done. Probably not. Probably not. But I ask this. If the deal were to get done, what do you think the package sent over from the Yankees could look like? Or as a Yankees fan, what would you be okay with? Because one of the things that has been a little ridiculous on the Yankees side of this has Cashman come out saying, I'd like to not trade Gleyber, Andujar, or Clint. Maybe it's a strategy to pump up their value. But Mr. Cashman, I have no idea how you're getting anybody of value if you're not going to be trading anybody of value from your team. But if you saw a move to get done for DeGrom, do you have an idea of what you think it could or should look like?
I mean, what he said, he is just trying to drive up the value, okay? Because Clint Frazier is going to have to go. He's probably the number one guy that goes in any deal. Not that it's anything against Clint Frazier. I like Clint Frazier. I think he should be on the team now. You know, I think he should be platooning with Brent Gardner in left field. You know, play against lefties and Gardner goes against righties. So I like Frazier, but he is superfluous. He's an extra player. They don't need him. Andujar is going to have to go in a deal. You know, and once again, it's nothing against any of these players. But you got to give up value to get value. And the reason I think Andujar goes is his value may never be any higher than it is right now. And third base can be replaced. It can be replaced on the roster with Drury. It can be replaced in another trade. There are many third basemen on the trade market this year. I mean, they can wait on Donaldson to see if he figures it out in Toronto and get healthy. Moustakas, and it goes on and on and on. There's plenty of third basemen out there to replace Andujar. And if you get a DeGrom-type player, you do the deal. After that, you're looking at more minor league players. Really depending on what the Mets want. The Yankees have some pitching. You know, like I said, do you want Justus Sheffield? I think the Yankees would not want to trade him. Matter of fact, if I'm the Yankees, I would trade Frazier before I traded Sheffield. Because I think left-handed pitcher, Yankee Stadium, he's someone who's built to be a number two starter. Once again, I would hope he can stay. Albert Abreu, you're going deeper to the Yankee minor league system now. Is someone else they could look at here? I thought the whole as good an offseason as Cashman had, I thought the mistake he made, assuming the reports were true, and I have a hard time believing they are, but that he would not give up Frazier and Chance Adams for Cole. I'm sure there were some other lower pieces involved as well, but those are the two main pieces. You know, and that's what makes me think that maybe, you know, he is very high on Frazier and doesn't want to give him up in a deal. Maybe he's not. Maybe he is telling the truth there. And if he is, I think it's going to be very hard for the Yankees to get a deal done with anybody, because I would have given up Frazier and Chance Adams for Cole in a heartbeat for many reasons. I like Cole. You know, I also think that Cole is cheaper. He's on the team control for a few more years, so he wouldn't have blown up the salary. The luxury tax for the Yankees, I would have done that deal, and I'm not very high on Chance Adams. He's one of the few Yankee prospects that I don't think is going to really amount to anything.
I think one of the difficult things maybe for the Yankees to gauge, though, right, and this is something that's similar in the NBA to the Boston Celtics, is you want to be competitive now because you're competitive, right? I mean, you're one of the three best teams in all of baseball. So it's hard to turn away from that. But on the other end of this, your window's wide open. I mean, wide open right now in every single way imaginable, not just because you have all of this talent, being so young, Aaron Judge, Gleyber Torres, Miguel Andujar, Gary Sanchez, the list goes on. But because you are also the Yankees, that at any moment you can acquire the necessary assets in the free agent market as long as you are willing to pay to do so. And I think that could be the difficult thing for the Yankees to really kind of counterbalance, because you do not want to sell the farm, the quote, sell the farm, or mortgage the future, the cliche, when you don't have to. I actually do not know how happy Yankees fans would be if they traded Labor for DeGrom straight up. Now, the idea of that would have probably sounded kind of funny, maybe, at first. And we know what good Gleyber is, but that becomes a situation where if you make that move, you damn well better win a World Series. So now I wonder if that's part of this whole dilemma for this side of the Yankees, is finding that balance of staying aggressive because you know that there is a chance within reason. They are going to be one of the six teams that have a real shot at a World Series. Maybe that number is even smaller than six. They're going to be in that number, whatever it is. But they're going to remain in that number for years to come.
I agree. I agree with everything you just said. The Yankees are in a strong position because they're under the luxury tax. I mean, they're under the luxury tax. That's why even if they trade Andujar this year to get that DeGrom, that ace starting pitcher, okay, we'll sign Machado next year. I mean, it's a joke what they can do, and they'll still be under the tax. They're in such a strong position to pretty much do whatever they want. The problem is there just aren't a lot of starting pitchers out there, ace starting pitchers. Really, DeGrom might be the only one. You know, I mentioned Bumgarner earlier. I don't think the Giants would trade him. I just don't think so. He's under a very good team-controlled contract. And the Giants, you know, let's face it, they're competitive this year. Yeah, they're only 43-40, but they're only 4.5 games out. And unless they fall apart next month, they won't be out of it. So they'll have no incentive to trade Bumgarner. So who else, out of all the other pitchers you can name out there, who else is going to be that ace that you need? It's not there. You know, Michael Fulmer's gotten a lot of Yankees were after him in the offseason. They've been talking to, I guess, scouting him this week as well. But we know the asking price by Detroit is astronomical, you know, which is just telling you that they don't want to trade him. So that's why it's going to be very difficult for the Yankees, even with their minor league system, as strong as it is, it's going to be very difficult for them to get what they want because it's just not there. It's just not the major league level. It's just not there for them to get this year, which it's going to be very difficult for them to catch a team like Houston without that second starting pitcher.
Absolutely. So now there are a lot of the Mets are right in line with this, right? And this is kind of where I want to transition is the idea of when do these teams start to sell off? It was something that you posed yesterday, kind of as we were talking about it. And there's a number of teams that are out. A lot of teams, I think, that you could say that are out. We know they're going to be sellers. Let's actually start here because there was a rumor that I know that popped up on my phone yesterday. It was kind of the idea that Moustakas could be on the move and potentially the Phillies as a suitor. Thoughts on that fit? Does that move make sense for the Phillies? Are you kind of surprised that this is where we're at with that with the Phillies being buyers at this deadline? Thoughts on them looking at Moustakas?
Well, the Phillies and the Braves, for that matter, are probably a year, maybe even two ahead of schedule.
Yeah.
I mean, these teams are playing well. They're in the thick of things. So, yes, I think it's a possibility. For the Phillies, though, if they do that, that pretty much means you're giving up on Franco, which I'm not saying that's a bad thing, mind you, but that's what you're saying. We're done with him, right? It's just not working out. He's not hitting. It's just not going to happen. Does he go in that deal back to KC? Does KC take a shot at him? Something else to think about there. But, yeah, I think the Phillies will be involved here, sure. And Moustakas to Philadelphia. I mean, think about it, fantasy value. He goes from hitting at a Coppa Stadium in KC, one of the better pitchers' ballparks, to Philadelphia. Boy, his fantasy stock would go up a little bit because that's a nice park to hit in there. Phillies could certainly make a run, and they have a strong system. The Phillies are a team. I would be pretty surprised as it stands right now if they don't end up with at least one of Machado and or Harper next season, in the offseason. People don't realize this is a big market team. They have got a huge amount of money in their TV contract. They can easily, if they can afford both, they want to. But I think they get at least one. And I think if I had to guess, I think it's going to be Machado there because, once again, he fits the shortstop third base plateau. Even though they had two youngsters, they had high hopes for Crawford and Franco. Neither one's working out right now. So I think Machado going there makes some sense to get his $400 million or whatever it's going to be there. So I think he ends up there. I think Philadelphia's going to be a major player here, not only at this trade deadline, but in the offseason. I think this team is right where it wants to be. And Atlanta's not that far back either. Atlanta is a team that everyone's going to come calling to because they have good young pitching in the minor leagues. So this is a team that everyone's going to want to talk to. You know, hey, we'll trade you this guy, and we want, you know, this young Gohara. You know, you can go on and on with the Atlanta starters, by the way. Soroku's on the DL. Ian Anderson, Kyle Wright, Carter Stewart. I mean, it goes on and on and on, the guys they have in there and their pitching. This is a team that also is not a big market, but they have $47 million coming off the books in contracts they took on. You know, Adrian Gonzalez is on. Brandon McCarthy is on. Matt Kemp is on. These all go away after the season. So if they want to make a big splash, if they wanted to go at the Bryce Harper, they could. You know, I don't think they will, mind you, but they could.
As of today, Braves and Phillies are both wild card teams on the other end of that spectrum. The Kansas City Royals are 25-56. I think it's safe to say they are ready to sell off. We're going to talk more about teams who fit that description that are ready to sell when we come back here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844 844- 844-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
And we are back here on Fantasy Sports Today on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Kevin Walsh alongside George Kurtz. We just had a goal scored by Angel Di Maria against France for Argentina. That game is now 1-1. The first goal came from Antoine Griezmann on a penalty. George, you had an all-time response to when I asked you interest in the World Cup. You said, is the World Cup of hockey on? I absolutely love that. Let me quickly tell the people about mybookie.ag, because if you enjoy playing daily fantasy sports but are sick of dealing with professionals using algorithms to select hundreds of lineups and entries, try the props builder tool at mybookie.ag. Forget having to create multiple lineups, ditch the hassle of dealing with late scratches, and avoid experts winning 90% of the money. Invest in the players that you want without salary caps. And if you sign up for a new account using the promo code FNTSY, you can elect an option to receive a 50% deposit bonus with a rollover requirement. No more dealing with late lineup scratches. No experts to compete against. Just you and the prop that you choose. So go over to mybookie.ag, enter promo code FNTSY upon sign up, and choose your matchups using the props builder tool. That is mybookie.ag, promo code FNTSY. So, George, we were talking about the Kansas City Royals right there, because they are a team that I think it is comfortable enough to say they are out. They are 19 and a half back in their division. They have a better chance of winning their division than making the wild card as things currently sit, which is a tough spot to be in. And there are a lot of teams that fit that mold, I think. Obviously, the Baltimore Orioles, the Chicago White Sox, I think the Mets and the Marlins are also within that range. Probably the Cincinnati Reds as well. Let's begin with the Mets quickly. If you're the Mets, because this is a team that's held out hope for a while. 13 and a half back, 10 or so back of the wild card. Are you confident enough with still, I guess, a month to play to say, I could trade right now if a team called me right now? Or do the Mets have a case to say, let's just see what it looks like at the deadline?
Are the Mets truly kidding themselves to think they're in this thing? They have played terribly now for how long? 6 weeks? 2 months? I mean, awful. I mean, this is not a team in a slump. Yeah. This is a team playing awful baseball. Your run differential is minus 58. You're 1-9 your last 10. You can't get these injuries figured out. I mean, I don't care if you're hiring Trapper John and the staff at Gray's Anatomy. It's just not working out. All right, for some reason, this team gets hurt over and over again, and there's weird injuries. You know, Syndergaard in the finger. He might miss a start. Now he's been out weeks. You know, it goes on and on and on. Jay Bruce, day to day, up DL. Suspended doesn't seem like he wants to play for the Mets anymore. I mean, it's just strange, isn't it? Yeah, he just has no interest in playing baseball, at least not for the Mets. I mean, listen, it's a dumpster fire.
What do you do with Cespedes, George? What do you do with him? Because
what can you do?
I agree. I don't, you know, one of the things that I wasn't expecting with this potential sell-off, because I've had this conversation with some Met fans and I've mentioned the Yankees stuff, and it's like, what do I do with Clint Frazier, right? I've got you on a Cespedes. It's like, maybe you got to get rid of Cespedes as well. But what kind of value can you get back for a guy that's injury prone, that's not playing? I remember having this conversation with Matt Harvey, and I wonder if we're going to head to the same point with Cespedes. I'll like, trade Harvey. His value is at its lowest. You got to wait. Well, it only got worse. Can you make the argument that they got to move on from Cespedes right now? If you're going to move on from DeGrom, why do you hold on to Cespedes?
But the problem is this. Let's say you're absolutely correct. The Mets believe, okay, he doesn't want to play here. We got to get rid of him. He's got 2 years left at $27.5 million per year. Not to mention the rest of this year, which is another $13 million. That's $70 million to still do him. Who wants to take that on for a player? As you said, injury prone, doesn't seem to want to play, 32 years old. Who wants to take that on? You know, if to do this, you'd almost have to say, hey, all right, listen, we'll trade you at DeGrom, but you got to take Cespedes with him. and we'll take, you know, we'll,
oh, man, that's
the prospect value now goes through, the prospect value plummets through the floor. Because you're not getting anywhere near an Andujar now, as far as from the Yankees, someone like that. You'd get maybe a B level prospect, maybe even B minus, because someone's got to take on $70 million. You know, it's a very interesting question to ask, because what is wrong with Cespedes? What is truly, is it a true injury? And I have my doubts here. I think this guy's in no rush to get back. You know, because he sees what's going on here. Just, this has no interest in playing for the Mets. You know, it's a mess. Things aren't going well. And that, even if you could commit to another team, how do they know that's the end, that he's going to want to play for them? If I'm the GM of, you know, whatever, how do I know he's going to play for me? Or he's going to do the same crap, just get his money paid and, you know, stay on the DL, go golf and do whatever he wants to do, but not play baseball, not be the player I paid for. You know, or then again, to acquire a DeGrom or a Syndergaard, do I not care? He plays great. He doesn't. Okay, I needed DeGrom or Syndergaard. I was willing to pay that price. You know, and then again, how many teams could afford that to take on $70 million? You're talking 6, 8 at most, and half those won't need a DeGrom, won't need a Syndergaard. Boston doesn't need the starting pitching. They're out of it. You know, and then any small market team, they're out of it because they're not taking on $70 million. The Mets are stuck here. I mean, they're really stuck here. You can make an argument now. Which is the worst contract, Cespedes or Ellsbury?
I'd like to believe that there is more with Cespedes, but I remember that this point was made. I believe I first heard it a while back from Michael Kay. And I think that his point was, there is a reason that a player of this talent is now headed to his fourth franchise in 4 years. And I was like, but the situations were different. That's how it always came off to me, right? That the A's were selling, and then the Red Sox were kind of just going to move on from him, but then Detroit was in a position to sell. Like, it just kind of seemed like that was out of his control. But maybe there was something to that. And I don't want to harp on Cespedes for too long, because he's not a big name that people are going to be looking to acquire. You just kind of mentioned him as someone that you've got to take. If you want one of our top guys, please take this guy off our hands, which is just a wild fall from grace from a Yoenis Cespedes. But I think perhaps if you're the Mets, maybe it is less, if you do move on from Cespedes, maybe it is less than about trying to get back a lot of assets from him. Maybe he's just bad for the locker room. Maybe he's bad for the culture. Now, I'm not saying that there's been a ton of reports that that is the case. I mean, but we know that this guy had to hold himself back from going golfing when the golfing was continuously upsetting his hamstrings. He's like, oh, man, I just wish I could golf. You know, at one point, he blamed a slump on not being able to golf. Like, I don't know how much I want to commit to that guy. But let me move on. Let me move on to the Baltimore Orioles. We've known that the Baltimore Orioles were out of this for... since April, maybe? I mean, that's what it feels like, at least. And obviously the big
April.
Game.
November?
Yeah, you can't argue on that. Machado's the big name here. And obviously, I think he kind of, perhaps for you, inspired this conversation. To me, it was right where my mind had went through. Just, when do these teams start to move on? Because you can make the case maybe the Mets would want to wait, or maybe other teams would want to wait to see how, because DeGrom's value right now, like, it could only go down. It can't get any higher. He's one of the best pitchers in all of baseball, right? So maybe you wait. But if you are a team that is wanting to trade for Manny Machado, wink, wink, the Los Angeles Dodgers, what in the world are you waiting for? Because the price isn't going to change from now until July 31st. There's really nothing that's going to happen to that price. You're currently 3 games back off your division. You've been one of the better baseball teams since the end of May. You know you're going for it. Like, there, so what would you wait for? I don't really understand why the Dodgers right now, if you know that you're going to be in on Machado on July 31st, why are you not in on Machado on July 1st?
Oh, I agree where you're going with this, but I think we're forgetting one little problem here. Peter Angelos. I don't think he's trading Machado. Not right now. I think he wants to milk out every fan he can in the seats to watch to see it, that'll pay to see Machado. And as soon as Machado gets dealt, let's face it, I love Camden Yards. Beautiful ballpark. Mm-hmm. But the only fans who are going there are fans of the other team. All right, that means it'll be 10,000 people a night. It just will be. You know, I'm sorry, Phil Backett, former producer. That's just the way it'll be. I mean, this is a team that's... it's not very good. And I made the joke about November, but that really wasn't a joke. I mean, their pitching staff's horrendous. I mean, horrendous. it's that bad. Everybody knew they were going to get beat up. It's just a matter of time. I think they made a lot of mistakes with Machado, and by that I mean he probably should have been traded at the deadline last year or in the offseason. It wasn't difficult to predict that this was going to be a bad team. You weren't, we thought we were going to contend this year. It didn't work out. All right, we got to deal him. Nobody thought they were going to contend this year. Okay, so you should. The longer you wait, the less his value is. Because a team like the Dodgers, who I get it, they made sense. They lost Seager. But now, because you won't trade him, they're only going to get him, assuming it's July 31st, for 60 games rather than 80 games, or rather than 100 games. They could have made the deal when Seager got hurt. You've lessened his value because he's going to go to the free agent market. He's going to make $400 million. And that team's not going to want to give up three, four top prospects for a guy who's going to play 60 games for them. It's just not going to happen. So they did this badly, and that's all on Angelos. I have no doubt that the GM wants the deal and wants to move him. I think they know the deal here. We're not going to win anyway. But I think this is all Angelos that he won't sign off on the deal. He just won't sign off on it because we haven't even heard any rumors of Machado going anywhere, which is shocking. I mean, it's just shocking because we know he's going to get dealt, or he should get dealt. I mean, can Angelos really be that stupid or that crazy and not deal him and not make your team better? Get your team better because Machado's not coming back there. You're not going to sign him. Angelos is not forking over $400 million, $350 million, whatever it's going to cost to sign this guy. They're not going to do it. I don't know who is right now. I said, I think it's Philadelphia be my lead guess. But you know it's not you. So why aren't you getting as much as you can for him? And for me, once again, it's all about money. As soon as they trade Machado, no one's coming to the ballpark anymore.
But you know what the thing too, though, is, right? At some point, you're going to want people to come back to the ballpark, and that would be through the trade, right? The prospects that you would be getting back. And the problem is the longer they wait, the less teams that are going to be around. The Yankees are a team that I don't know how serious they would have been involved in it anyway. But the way Andujar is, they're not making that move. There's absolutely no reason. They might be interested in free agency, especially if they move Andujar in a different deal. They're not looking for Machado now. How real can the Dodgers even be in considering keeping this guy past however many games he plays for them, knowing that Machado wants to be at shortstop? And listen, it does not matter. It does not matter if you think Manny Machado is better than Corey Seager. The Dodgers are sticking with Corey Seager. No doubt about it. Well, Machado then might not be in the plans for them. And also, as I mentioned, as good as they've been since late May, they're still not in first place. If things get real bad, because we've seen things turn real bad real quick on certain teams. I'm looking at you, New York Mets, 11-1 to now one of the worst teams in all of baseball. What if things just bottom out for the Dodgers and now they're out of this? The longer you wait, the fewer teams are likely to be involved in this Machado race. And people might try to counter, maybe new contenders will emerge. You still need to fit a certain criteria, though, for those contenders. They need to be willing to move on from high-level prospects for a guy for 60 games that they may or may not be able to sign or be even interested in re-signing. So I can't agree with you anymore, because the longer they wait, the worse this likely is going to get for them.
I agree. I think this is all on Angelos. He just won't give them permission to move. It's all about money. He wants to fill as many seats in Canada as he possibly can, because that's the only reason you do this. Because the longer you wait, the less you're going to get back in return. I think Machado's hurt them probably a little bit also as far as, will he play third base, or is it only shortstop now? Because that's what he said. I mean, that may have hurt them a little bit, but I think Machado, I mean, we saw it this week. He didn't run out that double play ball the other day. That was an ugly look. And if I'm Showalter, I might have blown my top. I might have removed him from the game right there. I don't care about embarrassing him. When you don't run out a double play ball, I mean, he's literally jogged down the first base. But I think it's also telling you where Machado's head is at right now. There's nothing to play for there. Yeah. So I think as much as he said he's a shortstop now, I think he would play third base for a contender.
I think that's a fair point. I want to mention something though before we hit hour number three, because then we're gonna go full into football. Speaking of football, the Nationals, they put up two touchdowns and a field goal on the Phillies yesterday, and I think the big name that comes from this game is Juan Soto, who has been unbelievable and kind of out of nowhere to agree. I mean, he was playing low A ball yesterday. I think became the youngest player of all time to have four hits and two home runs in a single game. He is now with 8 home runs on the season and 21 RBIs. Is hitting 336 in in just 116 at-bats. He has been unreal. He's only 19 years old. I mean, I don't know how... I don't know what to say. I mean, he's unreal. He's unreal.
He's not bad. He's not bad. 19 years old to be doing what damage he's doing. It's amazing. I mean, I forget who it was who posted on Twitter yesterday. You know, the Washington Nationals have the best left-handed hitter in baseball. They have Bryce Harper now and Adam Eaton too. He's doing that well this quick. Adjustments are going to come. Sooner or later, baseball's going to, they're going to review the video. They're going to find the hole in his swing to find out what he doesn't hit well, and he'll have to adjust to that. You know, and that'll really determine what he'll do in the second half. You know, I don't know when that's coming. Could be a week, could be a month, could be 2 months. We don't know, but it will come. And that always determines with these young players about how well they're going to do, how quickly they can make that adjustment. But right now, if you have Soto, you're living the high life here. I've got him in a few leagues here. I'm thrilled. But yeah. That being said, he's not untradeable. You know, someone who offers me something for a more proven player, I'll make the deal.
Let me then quickly just play a little devil's advocate here. And this is creating a conundrum for no reason, but I can't resist. Soto or Gleyber Torres?
Oh, see, you kill me as a Yankee fan here. Probably Soto because five outfielders. You know, probably Soto, I say. It's the extra outfields, and I'm probably going to need an outfielder more than I might need a second baseman / shortstop. You know, so that's where I'm leaning towards there. But no one saw this power coming from Torres. I mean, he's got, 14, 15 home runs and a triple off the wall last night. The kid is as good as advertised, which is rare in this day, right? It's rare that we actually get one of these youngsters who is as good as advertised. Torres and Soto, for that matter, they both are. And isn't it kind of scary, by the way, that Victor Robles is actually ahead of everyone on everyone's rankings of Soto in the Washington organization? What's this kid going to be like when he finally plays?
It's funny enough. I was leaning towards Torres positionally, though, for because you felt like with the alpha with the depth makes a ton of sense. I just feel like the numbers that you're getting from Gleyber at the second base position make him so valuable. It doesn't matter if you have either one of those guys in your fantasy leagues, or if you're a Nationals fan or a Yankees fan, or even just a baseball fan, it is fantastic stuff that you are getting from two of the brightest stars in baseball. Gleyber's only 21, Juan Soto's only 19. Unreal stuff. We come back here on Fantasy Sports Today. We're going to take it over to the NFL where, yep, you guessed it, things are a mess. Join us for hour number 3 coming up after this.